We live in a perpetual revolution. The essence of our media's breathless headlines is not resistance to a particular regime or ruler, but a revolt against the very concept of civil order.
Aaron Wolf, executive editor of Chronicles Magazine, talking about his presentation at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
We are now witness to the fact that civilization falls apart when its people abandon a shared belief in the permanent things, an enduring moral order established by God that exists outside of us.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wolf making the case for conservatism at our one and only 2019 Making the Case conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Find out more about the premier conference for Christian laity at issuesetc.org or give us a call 618-223-8385.
On this vote, the yeas are 53, the nays are 44, three-fifths of the senators duly chosen and sworn not having voted in the affirmative, the motion is not agreed to.
That's the announcement of a Senate vote Monday on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. It failed to receive the 60 votes necessary to move forward. This bill would have extended federal legislative protection to babies who were born alive during an abortion. Some people are saying that this is one of those moments in American history where things will change. How will they change? What does this vote tell us about those who support abortion, who are our legislators, and those who are opposed to abortion? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 26th of February. We're going to be talking about Monday's Senate vote on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Jennifer Popick, Legislative Director of National Right to Life, will be our guest for the first few minutes of the program. We'll have a conversation on the beliefs and practices of the Church of Scientology with Dr. Jeff Mallinson, author of a chapter on Scientology in the book The Christian Difference. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We're going to talk with him about a New York Times op-ed column titled Why the Priesthood Needs Women. It argues that the clergy abuse crisis in the Roman Catholic Church is due to the fact that they don't ordain women. We'll get his response to that. Then Mark Tula will bring us up to date on the General Conference of the United Methodist Church that is making some weighty decisions on LGBT clergy and marriage. He's author of the book Taking Back the United Methodist Church. Joining us to talk about Monday's Senate vote on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, Jennifer Popick, Legislative Director for National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What would the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act do?
This bill would create a set medical standard that doctors would have to follow in the event that a baby is born alive during a failed abortion. And it would also give, it would, you know, punish abortionists who ran afoul of that. And it would also give the mother in that case, the one who would, you know if something went wrong, the right to sue an abortionist if her baby's delivered alive and then he does something to not treat or, in fact, end the baby's life.
Why was it important for the U.S. Senate to vote on this bill?
Right. I think that, you know, there's this big eye in the Supreme Court, and a lot of states in response started working on really radical abortion measures. New York and Virginia were the two that got the most national attention. And we not only had New York removing protections that had been in their law for born alive babies, where, you know, if you're doing a really late abortion in New York, another person had to be there, one that was specially able to care for premature or, you know, newborn babies, because abortionists tend not to have both skill sets. Some of them do, but not all of them do. And so New York had required another doctor to be there. And New York removed that requirement. And then we also had the Virginia measure that would have allowed abortion up to the moment of birth, even while a woman's in labor, ultimately failed. But then we had Governor Northam go on a radio program and say that he was advocating for something that was tantamount to infanticide, that, you know, the baby would be born and we wouldn't treat it, we'd decide what to do. And I think it really shocked the conscience of the nation.
So how did the vote go yesterday? What happened?
You know, I'm not somebody who's easily shocked, but we did have 44 senators block the bill. That was, they were all Democrats, and then three Democrats joined with a majority of Republicans that they said, we're going to cut off the filibuster, we're going to go vote on this bill, we're going to debate it and vote on it, but the bill needed 60. So the final vote was 53-44. So three Democrats joined with all Republicans present, and but it wasn't enough to meet the 60-vote threshold.
So it was a procedural failure, even though there were more votes in favor of the bill itself.
Correct. And, you know, we were happy to see that it garnered a majority of votes, but this is something that's quite shocking. It couldn't get to 60. And so you need 60 to cut off debate, otherwise the other side could filibuster it. So it was a procedural vote, but it was really on the substance of the bill. You know, if you can't move to it, it doesn't become law.
What do those results tell you?
I think the results tell us that I think the Democrats are more dug in than ever, that abortion has become no longer the days of Bill Clinton or even, you know, that sort of era where they were trying to keep abortion safe, rare, and legal. Now, the Democrats are trying to move the party where all taxpayer funding of abortion for any and all reasons, you know, and we even see these campaigns from Planned Parenthood and others, you know, shout your abortion, be proud of it. So I think we see that the other side is gearing up for a day where Roe may no longer be, you know, the law of the land, and they're really digging in.
So what does the fact that some of those senators voting no yesterday are also candidates for president in 2020 tell you?
I think this is a really strong indication where they are. You know, you sort of look at Barack Obama when he first ran for president. He had been in the Illinois legislature, and he had been opposed to a born alive measure at that time, and the media just refused to believe it. We'd like well documented. We'd be like, no, he was one of the few that voted, you know, against it. And, you know, it was sort of one of these things that was hidden. He hit it, the media hit it, but now we see these main presidential candidates all in favor of something that's tantamount to infanticide. They won't protect babies born alive. And so I think what it's setting up is a really clear choice between an administration that many people were skeptical of but has been extremely pro-life, and we have a president who speaks clearly on protecting babies in his State of the Union address in a high-profile speech. It's going to be a big contrast here between all of the current front runners and the Republican nominee.
Can you give us some of the history of this piece of pro-life legislation? It's been there in one form or another since 2002, I believe.
Correct. So let me sort of back up to what happened in 2002. Now, there was controversy at the time which led to the need for the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, it was called. And that was passed unanimously in the Senate. And I mean, how far we've come. And what that bill did was it said when a baby's born alive, it's a person under federal law. And so we thought that at that time that that was going to be sufficient. So as long as it's a person, you know, we felt like that the state and federal government would be able to come in and prosecute somebody who, you know, ran afoul, did the things that you wouldn't normally do for somebody in that condition. But it turns out that evidences have multiplied in the time since that was passed, that it's not, because there's no enforcement mechanism, it hadn't been enforced. And so the new piece of legislation, it's essentially an enhanced piece of legislation, leaves that old law intact, but then it creates a very clear medical standard that abortionists have to follow. Because what was going on was they were saying, no, it wasn't viable, or, you know, I didn't have any special equipment to treat the baby, anything like that. In addition to that, in addition to things like Kermit Gosnell, the abortion practitioner in Philadelphia who's in federal prison now. But it became clear, evidence had multiplied, that the law needed beefing up. And additionally, in addition to setting out clear medical standards that have to be followed, it gives a private cause of action to a woman, to the mother, who is harmed in this situation. You know, she sees, like, I didn't realize I was this far along. I thought, you know, I was getting an abortion, and she heard her baby cry, and then this life was taken after the fact. It gives her a cause of action, because these kind of crimes are hard to discover, turns out. And they're tough to discover, and we don't see a lot of reporting, and so that's sort of the long history here. We needed this enhancement to the 2002 law.
I spoke recently with Hadley Arkus, who is the author of the Born Alive Infant Protection Act back then, and I wonder, based upon the conversation with him, why it has taken so long for something like this enhanced legislation to make it to even the consideration of the Senate.
Sure. I think, frankly, it sounded too unbelievable that we needed this. You know, you had Senator Hirono on the floor of the Senate last night. This is a solution in search of a problem, and, you know, this isn't really going on. And I think it suffered from this, that people didn't really believe this was happening. And so I think that's why it's taken so long. And now we, you know, pro-life circles or those who, we get reports from different states, especially states that do some good reporting. We were seeing evidence is multiplied, but I think why it's taken so long is it suffered from being unbelievable, but now we saw what New York legislature did. Abortion for any reason up to birth and removing those protections. Why would they do that? And then, you know, you see what the Virginia governor was advocating. So I think it needed to be, you know, out there. This is why we need this. This is literally what the other side is advocating. So I think that's why it's taken so long.
I'm surprised that in 2002, the Born Alive Infant Protection Act could be passed unanimously by the U.S. Senate, and that this enhanced legislation yesterday failed to get 60%. What has changed since 2002, in your opinion?
I don't know what's exactly changed. I think there's a lot more of this identity politics. I think the Democrats have really come down hard on their party that if you want to advance, you got to toe the line here. And frankly, I think that they have more cover now in terms of these candidates, they want Planned Parenthood money behind them. They want the support of the abortion industry going forward. I think pro-life Democrats are unfortunately becoming an endangered species, and it's not a direction that we like to see this go in.
Where does the American public appear to stand on the issue of protecting infants who survive abortion?
Now, that's a good question. There was a really, really recent poll done by the McLaughlin Group that just came out in the last few weeks, and it was an astounding 77% of Americans support this legislation. And that's so far out of line of where the Senate ended up. So I think what's, going to happen is there's this public outcry. It's not only highlighting the extremism of their side, but it's getting a whole new generation of people to think about abortion again. So I think that those numbers are really encouraging. 77% is way out of line with the Senate. So I think we're going to have to see a reckoning when it comes to re-election here.
So after this vote, will pro-life legislators finally go on the offensive and take these extreme views in a fight to the pro-choice movement?
I think that's what we're trying to do with this bill, and I hope the Senate considers the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act again, that stops abortions when babies can feel pain. I think we're on the offensive. It's tough in Congress. We have a divided, we have the Democrats controlling the House of Representatives and Republicans in the Senate, but this is certainly a fight that has taken to the states. Now, that we're really active in the states while Barack Obama was president, and I think there's a renewed vigor to pass pro-life protective legislation on pain capable, on banning dismemberment abortions, on banning abortion when the baby has Down syndrome, if that's the only reason you're going to get one, informed consent, ultrasound. These are really, really good laws, and I think states are on the offensive, and it's going to bubble up to the top here.
In his State of the Union address, President Trump said that he essentially said he would sign a Pain Capable Protection Act.
Yep, and the Senate was able to, again, last time around, get a majority of senators in favor, but not 60. And the administration had actually issued a formal letter saying, put it on my desk, we would sign it. So this is a pro-life administration, I think, top to bottom.
You're the legislative director for National Right to Life. Where do you go from here?
Well, where do we go from here? I think all efforts worth undertaking often take time, and the Senate moves slowly. And if any of your listeners or you are old enough to remember partial birth abortion, that debate that took place in the 90s, it took many, many attempts to bring senators on board, to get the 60 that we needed, to then, face a veto by then-President Clinton over and over on it. And it just took many, many years. And in the short term, the House of Representatives is going to be working on a discharge petition, is where if they get a majority of representatives to sign on. So it would require them getting Democrats to sign on to what's called a discharge petition, and they could bring it right to the floor around Nancy Pelosi. So that's something we're going to work on and work on hard in the next coming months.
Jennifer Popick is legislative director for National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to National Right to Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you very much for your time and keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you very much.
When we come back, Dr. Jeff Mallinson is going to join us. We're going to be talking about the beliefs and practices of the Church of Scientology. First of all, is it a religion? Is it a secret society? It's very secretive, Scientology is, especially the upper echelons. Is it a cult? We'll answer those questions right off, right after this.
Many patients are upset to learn that doctors don't take the Hippocratic Oath anymore.
National Review columnist Wesley Smith talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That's a real shame because the Hippocratic Oath protects patient safety. The speech I will give at the conference will describe the consequences of violating Hippocratic values in healthcare and the things that can occur in the healthcare system if we move away from Hippocratic medicine to a more utilitarian bioethics.
You can meet and hear Wesley Smith making the case for the Hippocratic Oath at the one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.